You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Hello once again, and welcome back to Line Noise. This is, in fact, a Line Noise that has been quite long in the making. It is with Marco D'Arcangelo, who's one half of legendary electronic music act D'Arcangelo, alongside his twin brother Fabrizio. And I wanted to speak to them at Primavera Sound 2025, and for various reasons, we didn't get around to it. It's a real shame, because I love them, quite frankly. And they were really, really nice, and they're like, look, okay, we can do it sometime later. So we did, and one day in early July 2025, I spoke to Marco. Fabrizio was working. We spoke about all kinds of things. We spoke about signing to Aphex Twin's Reflex label, about making music with a tracker. We spoke about a certain Italian tinge to their music. We spoke about the term brain dance, Thomas Dolby, Depeche Mode, what it was like to play Primavera Sound, and a lot more. And they are really fantastic, D'Arcangelo, so I really hope you enjoy this. Not all that many interviews with them, I don't think. Oh, and also news of perhaps a new album. So I hope you enjoy it. Line Noise comes to you with the support of Cupra. Thanks to them.
Cool. Well, look, thank you. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I'm sorry we didn't get to do it at the festival, but it was one of those, well, yeah.
Quite a time.
Yes. But how was your gig?
Oh, definitely. Well, thank you for having me. And Fabrizio. Fabrizio is not here, obviously, unfortunately. He lives somewhere else and he's stuck with his job. I'm more like a freelancer, so I got more... You know, I'm more available to do things and such things, so no trouble.
How was the Primavera gig?
I was willing.
The gig at Primavera Sound.
Oh, it was fascinating. It was really good. I mean, we enjoyed every minute. We had beautiful companions, young artists. As we realized, for some reason, all in a sudden, we thought we're from the 90s, and then, And it's like, no, it was really, really good. Again, it didn't matter the time. It was very, very intense. It was really we enjoyed it a lot.
I mean, it was, we were on at 3 a.m?
It was 3 a.m, and it was actually quite busy. So, excellent. I mean, it was everywhere busy. But we realized that the warehouse was the actual perfect place in town for that kind of sound. Really, in a way, we know that there were some other artists that were more like, I don't want to use the terms like mainstream. No, which is like, you know, it's fine. Okay, we just like enjoy, even if playing in a single room. Honestly, we do this for love, for the passion we have.
Can I ask, what is it like being in a band with your brother? It's something I've wondered a lot.
Okay, it's quite hectic sometimes, because what I actually know, being my brother, anytime he does something, it never sounds like I'm doing something, which is similar, but then I have to listen to it, what it does, and I think, yeah, that's exactly what I was just about to do. So this is actually the positive things. Sometimes it can get difficult, because obviously, like being in a band, like with any member of any band, you might sometimes find that, you know, you might do something slightly different, or like it did happen several times that he changed his mind at the very last second, and you have to rearrange all the tracks on the computer. And because obviously the work is done, like, you know, splitting all your tracks and intervene on the other, you know, members' tracks, like a bassist can play. So it sometimes can get difficult, because, you know, it's always like... I wish it went better, because this is anytime we do play, it's our first time, and it's like, let's hope it's going to get okay. Not because we are not confident, it's just because we obviously tend to do better, or we hope, you know, that any music we play, whether it's old tracks of us or new tracks, just to, you know, taste the water, let's see what it goes, let's see what people is going to react. And then sometimes, you know, just because it the equalizations might be wrong or something like that. And you have to, you know, carefully listen to what the other members of your band is actually doing. You know, like, is he doing okay? Or, you know, it can get difficult sometimes. But generally speaking, working with my brother has always been like working with myself, really. We don't make music together. Mm. You know, even Viterbo is in Parma. I've been in London for a decade. He was in Rome. So, but again, the good thing is that we have a nice connection.
Yeah. So I wanted to take it back to the start, if I may. I mean, when I think of Italy and electronic music, I think of Italo Disco, of course. I mean, Giorgio Moroder, for granted. But, you know, so obviously there's a very strong history of it. I mean, what was Rome like for electronic music in the 1980s when you were growing up?
There was quite a lot of, if we were talking about the 80s, we obviously grew up in the 80s in terms of like, we were like 14 years old or something like that, because we're 59. So yeah, basically it's going back to that date. And there was a lot of electronic music. And for some reason, I always been fascinated by the sounds of the synthetic drums. I remember listening to Thomas Dolby first album. And there was a sequence, it was Flying North, that initial sequence just hooked me up instantly. And so, you know, growing up, listen to some probably different music from the normal music that was, the mainstream music that at the time. And then again, if you listen to it now, which is, you know, the sound of the 80s, you realize that it was some bad music as well. As might there are bad music or you don't like that. As you get into the music, you go like, well, I've done this differently, I don't know. But then you realize how it influenced you as well. So there's, and in Rome, especially in the beginning of the 90s, we had this rave scene, the big one, you know, someone called the Sound of Rome. And so we, like any other person at the time, being like 18, 19, 20 years old, 23, I can't even remember how old I am anyway. we used to follow what it used to be, the new scene, the rave scene, the big one. So we had a good connection. We met with several people, and we enjoyed that to a certain degree, though, because Fabrizio used to buy more records than I used to. So he used to DJ more than I used to. I thought, well, I'm going to be a DJ. I never thought I'm going to be a DJ myself. I always think, I like to have that key, because at the time, as you know, there was no iPhone or cheap computer to make music. You have to own your own sampler, your own, groove box, what used to be at the time. And it was very expensive game. And so, because I used to, I used to work and a good job at the time, I could afford a very expensive sampler. It was the Ensoniq EPS 16 Plus, which used to cost quite a lot. I remember it was like 5 million lira at the time, so about like 2,000 euro, 2,000, which, might not be much, but that it was my door for the electronic music, because for some reason I thought, I used to play that music, but just for fun, like using Commodore 64, all that thing. So we were very well into these things, but for playing, it was just fun. And probably it remained fun this day, well, I guess.
Well, I was going to say, didn't you start off making music with a tracker? Isn't that an insanely difficult way to make music?
Absolutely. It was like, well, actually, we did start with sampler. Only one sampler. We couldn't afford much. Then I bought like a Dr. Rhythm, 5/8, I mean it was. So we, step by step, we built up our own little personal studio. And already it was this so-called bedroom studio. We didn't have a studio. Used to make, noise in a dining room, connecting. That was real. But then the most expensive year was the DAT machine, of course. There was not much. And then we had this contract with ACV at the time. When we started to do art techno, we went to the ACV sub-label of tracks. And the guy who owns the label had a proper studio. So he wanted to have, to go there with our machinery and record in studio. And it was fine. It was our very first studio experience, but The track came a bit later, actually, and it happened in London, actually, and it was, I mean, we used to do the some tracker stuff with the Amiga, obviously, you know, the pro tracker on the Amiga, so we had this experience on it, but we had the first EP only on a single tracker that I actually bought online. It was on this magazine that the Sound on Sound. It was called Sound on Sound.
Computer.
Yeah. And it was this tracker called AXS 2.0. It was a Dutch company. And it was the first tracker that used to have not just sampler, but two synth voices or such. And it was a challenge, honestly. It was on an Olivetti 3S6. I mean, honestly. But that was the challenge, you see. That what really pushed you the limits. Because today, yeah, you do any kind of music, but honestly, having that limit used to be probably sometimes I think, yeah, I should do some, you know, some music on a very complicated machines. And where you bumped into your little limit, and they have to, you know, try to figure out how can I do this effect or whatever pattern is. So yeah, it was very complicated understanding of that. Actually, I still have this program, and amazingly, it's still working nowadays on a Windows 10, which means that the programmer was a genius. Hello. But it was okay.
I've often wondered, do you think there's something innately Italian about your music?
Probably, because initially, with the if you take aside the art techno, you know, tracks we did, putting aside, we just stopped, and we went to this set of tracks where it used to be released on the other sub label of ACV, which was Out of Orbit, with the Diagrams. It was Automia Division, and it was just in Fabrizio, and that kind of sequencing. Because I used to listen to a lot of music of artists, which today, can I mention a couple? It was very basic electronic music, really. It was just sequencing and melodies that I used to. There was a lot of melodies in Italian music as well. It was different from whatever what used to happen in Germany. Like, I don't know, you remember the Duff Brothers? Which is not.
Yes. Really, yeah.
They were like very kraut, so electronic. Punkish, sort of amazing minimal as well. I don't want to say something and people say, oh, what you're talking about. It was quite minimal stuff in a way. And while the Italian were a bit like mellow, you know, like these sort of things. So yeah, I can say that probably being also a huge fan of Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
And listening to that very rare tracks from Depeche Mode where I used to only be instrumental. And I thought, yeah, why not? Because, you know, the difference from at the time was, at least the way I see it still today, is that there was not, it was a necessity to do techno, because otherwise, if you don't do that certain kind of music, nobody's going to listen to you. At the time, you could do any kind of music, it was just do it. So we were actually lucky to have a producer like Tony Verde that accepted that music. We wish to be like probably Apollo music used to be for ambient at the time. So yeah, and it's still today. So, and then, you know, things, you know, move, change and grow up, but it was certain Italian love and melodic sort of side of it. It was nothing sad, probably.
Because I first came across your work in the 90s on Reflex, as I'm sure a lot of people did. And for me, I think it was the melodies that always stuck out. I mean, obviously, a lot of stuff on Reflex did have melodies, but I thought that there was something very, very like clean and pure and beautiful about what you did.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, we are obviously like, it's fascinating because, Reflex was both Grant and Aphex Twin Richard. We were like so thankful because, again, accepting that kind of music for us was like, and I'm talking about the second side of the EP, which was, you know, the first EP was like half bit of industrial, the other half was melodic. And so for us, it was like just amazing that we could just release to the wild on a label like Reflex, music that maybe wasn't that type of, Reflex was never any, you know, it was everything it was. That was a good thing to do. It could be a techno ambient, so minimal, anything. So yeah, I mean, in Diagram, which was probably the tracks you, I think you heard that set of Diagrams. The first one was actually released earlier on Out of Orbit. And I remember Grant Wilson Claridge, when I met him for the first time, it was because he wrote something on a fanzine, you know, in London, used to be fan, no social, just like writing on the fans. And it was a chat, you know, important people used to give you some charts. And in this chart, there was the Diagram on Out of Orbit. And I was like, obviously fascinated. I was happy. Hey, Grant Wilson Claridge just put my tracks on a chart. And then I realized that he loved that sort of sound.
Yeah.
When I was lucky, the first time I met him, he said, you know, I really love the music on Out of Orbit. Can you know, do you have any demo and stuff? And that way we began. So, and this is actually our last release, which is a digital release, as you know.
Yeah.
Let's do what we mostly like to when you, you know, you say like, okay, what we do, what we mostly like is this melodic sort of complex rhythm, whatever. Whatever comes, it doesn't really matter. It is, we not stick to that kind of like patterning or what, I have to do techno, so 4/4 bits or electro, Miami sort of sound. I don't know, it's complicated. It's getting complicated because with so many genres, you know, on the plate, you're getting confused yourself, or at least I do. So because I don't care, and I always said to me, I think I do belong to the 90s. Because I do. I know, I mean, it's okay. And I like that, you know. Chronostasis, why not? So, yeah.
Is that how you ended up on Reflex then? Grant Wilson Claridge really liked your music and it came through in that way?
Again, yeah, I think so, because I bumped into Richard in Zurich in 1993, which probably was a year before, during the Energy 93, which was a big raid. And he was there, a creme de la creme was there, basically. And I remember questioning him at the hotel, and I had a bunch of records of mine, obviously, why not? And I had a double pack released, Art Techno. And I handed a copy to him. And he said to me, when was this release? And I thought, I think it was like June. And I remember he said to me, I think I have this copy. I was like, okay, right. And then I moved to London for other reasons. When I managed to bump into Grant Wilson Claridge into a record shop, it was the Silverfish record shop, a really nice place in London used to be. And he said to me, yeah, I love that. And when he, like I said before, he asked me for a demo. And I was shocked to see that he liked that kind of music. So here we go. It started this way.
Because, I mean, in the sort of early mid-90s, you were using various other names, Centuria City, Monomorph, things like that. And then you started to use the family name. I've often wondered, was that because you thought you'd really hit on something special? You're like, did it make it more personal, you know?
Actually, this was a suggestion by Grant. We thought, like probably many other artists used to do at the time, maybe not, but, you know, knowing, you know, started circulating, I used to work in this record shop as well. So, you know, talking and speaking with other people, you know, what's your name? Do you do records and such? So Grant knew that we used to be Automia Division, or Centuria City, or Centuria then. But the trouble is that we sectorize the music. So hard techno, whatever industrial was, well, Centuria is the project for that. or if you're into more like mellow electronic music, we have this Automia division. But then we had the trouble with the ACV label, because when Reflex finally told us, do you want to release with Reflex? And I thought, is that a question? And then I thought, hang on a minute, I cannot use any of my nickname because it was tied to the ACV. So knowing the guy, I said, no, thank you very much. We used to have Monomorph, though. But Monomorph used to be kind of a different project. And then Grant himself said to me, you should release, you're only using Dark Angel. And I thought, why you think that? And because he said to me, well, but that's you and your brother. It doesn't matter what music you do. You can do any genre of music, you're still Dark Angel. And I thought, hey, okay, let's do it. And that's it.
I thought it was a very good idea, actually. I mean, when I first heard you at the time, I had no idea it was your family name, you know, because it was, you know.
It was. It is. It still is.
So, again, I was looking back on possibly, I remember, no, I must have heard it before, but you were on the Brain Dance compilation, which was like a brilliant Reflex compilation.
Indeed.
In 2001. What did you make of the Brain Dance tag? Because I know musicians don't often like genre tags, but I quite like Brain Dance.
Okay, to tell you the truth, I didn't realize that I was on a Brain Dance like label until Brain Dance compilation came out. I mean, it sounds like incredible, but it is. I mean, because I remember at the time there was this discussion already back then on the IDM term, which is still it's still hunting us as well. But in a way, because everyone, well, I thought I was used to do electronic music. Okay, you got techno, you got electro, house, drum and bass, jungle, whatever it is. And you know what you're going to listen to about. But then this Brain Dance came out. And I remember probably, I don't want to say stupid things, but I think it was the answer by Reflex on the IDM term that we coined. I think it was journalist. And then again, because today is Brain Dance, and which means that you do a specific kind of music using a specific kind of instrument or pattern or technique. I don't know, but can I explain it to you? But that's exactly like you do. Okay, well, what we're gonna do, drum and bass. You know what you're gonna do with the drum and bass, you know, bass, you know, chopped break beats and stuff. Okay, you can do, I can see ambient drum and bass, which I don't know what it's all about. Like, honestly, I'm sorry, guys, I don't know what melodic techno is. I'm sorry, but it just like confuses me so much. Because probably I'm a bit of a purist, but probably I just realize I'm just old. I'm an old man, you know, when I still need to catch up with the new, you know, generation of things. As a matter of fact, we are happy that the new generation is approaching a lot. There's a lot of, but then again, with the IDM terms, when I listen, like anybody, probably you, when you, you know, bump into any video, the people, you know, tag as IDM. Sometimes when I listen, I always thinking, yeah, but IDM is not throwing like 20 sample at random. It isn't. What is IDM? I don't know. Because if you listen to any records of the 90s, there's everything. There's an ambient tracks. There's probably a techno tracks. There's a more complex, you know, whatever syncopated drum pattern tracks. So there's everything in that.
Yeah.
So like, I can mention to you so many records. So unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, this tagging system is not really helping in a way. Because it confuses people, or it's like being in a ghetto, or what do you do with that? And I don't, because if I release an album which are like a bit of this, a bit of that, am I going to break the system? It's like, oh, what is this? The Brain Dance was definitely the answer by Reflex. And I think it was just the provocative things, which then, you know, grow up and we're still here today.
I mean, the song of yours that was on that compilation, Diagram 7, the 80s mix, is an absolute classic. Is that the song you're best known for, maybe?
Everything was chosen by Grant, because I remember we had there was a compilation done for, I think it was the Rockstar Games, Manhunt. It was a series of remixes. And I thought that, that we had just one slot for that compilation, but then we had two.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, oh, okay, so, you know, are you going to pick up both of them? There's no reason, you know. And then again, Grant always said this to me, you are the artist. We are the producer. We know better. I mean, what best can run our label in a way. It was like, you know, going to a shop, browsing the records, picking our records up and going like, oh, I haven't got this. That was the technique, as I remember, was explained by Grant. So that tracks was probably, and then again, I think Diagram is on, we learned us until the day we die, because it's a bit like Duran Duran with Rio or something like that. They don't so much. I was just like, I know what it feels like, you know. I said, oh, that kind of Diagram. You go like, yeah, but I had like, so many records past that. And, you know, it's like, but it's fun. It's okay, nice.
Talking about more modern records, your most recent was the Electric Road EP in December 2024. How do you feel that fits into your catalogue?
I think probably it fits very well, because, sometimes that is the same concept, that is happening, same, that when we released the Diagram for Reflex, because I handled this set of recordings that was done just when you got really nothing else to do. And he suggested me, you should release this. And I thought, you know, it's not because I didn't want to release that set. Mm. It's because I didn't thought, are we ready for this? The ready tracks will be released, you know, it just, but then again, he was always right. And I thought, a minute, people's always asking me, sometimes messaging me about, hey, what about Diagram? Or why don't you do this? About Melodic Theatre, and then you go, Electric Road. And it was, again, a challenge. It was, but we never expect much, you know. Mm. We loved the release, and we had a very good feedback about Electric Road. And that's where we stop, because we don't want to, I don't know, it's kind of strange. It's, you know, when you have a record, or you have a, let's say, a successful record.
Yes.
So what you do, what usually record company does, is repeat its and then such, you know. They do the second release, which sounds just the same. And we don't want to do that. We just want to do, okay, that was that. And the next might be better or worse. And that was exactly what happened with another nickname we have. Mm-hmm. Which is Undiagnosed. And that was, and again, a set of tracks that Grant said to me, you should release that all together, like, you know, we are just following his nice suggestion, because we know that he can handle this. But it was a nice suggestion, it was a nice, oh, you should do that. And I thought, yeah, let's do this. And it went very well.
Mm-hmm.
The second, the fifth EP, was a bit like weirdly, it didn't have that listening or feedback we had with the first batch of releases. But then again, this is because we don't have Instagram, we're not on TikTok, and probably because we don't believe into promoting ourselves that way. It's probably because we love to talk when there's something to say. It's like, yeah, okay, why should I be on Instagram every day or say, oh God, look at me, I'm doing these tracks. I always think to myself, I don't care. You're going to listen, not because I don't care. It's just like, I do prefer to listen when the track is ready, as in it's released, you know?
Yeah.
Because if I don't know, called you, oh, listen to what I'm actually making. When is that track is finished, you heard it already. And maybe you like the first set and not the final release. You know, my mind was this way. It was like, you're going to listen to my voice when I have something to say. And this is probably what it's the policy of old people that used to thinking, you know, okay, I don't dance, you know, sorry, I don't dance. I don't want to be too picky on TikTok people in a way. Instagram could be interesting, but then again, we are organizing ourselves because we need to be more present. This is for sure, we need to be more present. And in the Primavera Sound Festival leaflet, there was this writing about, well, we rarely play live, which isn't that true, but it's okay. I'm probably that kind of, you know, festival. Yeah. But then again, it was nice to play our music, which probably belongs to the past, but it can sound as well as the new present. Why not?
Well, I was going to say, your last new original album was 2013, right?
True.
Any chance of a new album coming up soon? Is that something that...
We are working on a new set of tracks. We are taking our time. We're always taking our time to release. We don't release one every 6 months or whatever. But this is because, before the pre-COVID time, it used to be more like hectic. But then The payment is switched all off. So it takes time to, you know, rearrange yourself, your mind and whatever. Because we're both working. We, you know, music is our passion for us. So we have to set things up, family, business, etc. So we have at least a couple of projects to launch. But again, we were trying to probably a new Monomorph, because we've been asked as well at Primavera Sounds. But then again, because we wanted to do it right, we are taking our time to release, but it's not going to be far from... probably a couple of months, 3 months, let's see how it goes. But then, I'm working on, and we never released with this so-called album or LP, you know, the last one was the audiovisual design, which was the last of Reflex. And, but then again, that's another concept, because for us, the LP used to be like a paint, you know, something that tells you a bit about that. It wasn't just an EP, which is a quick thing to tell people, hey, I'm making the tracks. The album, it was a little booklet, you know, you open, you got the blah, blah, blah. So let's see how it goes. But we got things running and hopefully going to release pretty soon.
I hope to hear it. That's great news. What's your working method like? I think you say you don't work together. You kind of send files back and forth and each add your thing, right?
Yeah, it does, actually. It works this way. It does its own things and I don't mind. And again, like I said earlier in this interview, when I listen to Fabrizio's tracks, I always thinking, I should, you know, this is exactly what I was doing. Oh, this is, yeah, that's sound, that's my sound. But then, obviously, he likes to change or modify whatever it is, the bass line or the drum pattern. And we accommodate ourselves. We come to a certain degree of... agreement. Okay, that's it. That's finished. You know, as we never thought a track or whatever piece of music is never finished. It's just a compromise between you and yourself. And you go like, enough. I'll listen to these tracks enough. Let's be, because we do like probably many artists does. You know, we do one track or three tracks in a day or open that old project. And we don't just, you know, fix our head until that track is finished. It's like a bit of this, a bit of that. And then in the COVID time, we managed to buy so much hardware because we used to be surrounded by hardware, like an entire studio. But then again, we thought, yeah, you know, computer time. And then all people now today talking about doorless jams, etc. and stuff, which makes no sense to me in a way, because they're all computers anyway, in a way. But... we like to, again, consider the standalone gear as a challenge, you know. And then it still is. Although, when you have your own method of making music, like anyone, whatever it is, Cubase, Ableton Live, or Reaper, anything, it's just like, because you know what you're doing, and it's quicker when you learn things. But then again, yeah, the method is, I do my own tracks, he does his own, and we melt this together and see what happens.
Well, what happens? Let's say you make a track and you send it off to Fabrizio.
Yeah.
And he changes the bass line, let's say.
Yeah.
You don't change it back. That's it. You're not allowed
there are things that he always said to me, like, oh, I like this, but I'm not convinced about the bass line. Oh, I'm not convinced about this. And I don't. And sometimes I do the same just to piss him off. Sorry.
twin brothers.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I remember you said that you didn't like that. No, yeah, we do, because I have to respect his opinion, obviously. Mm-hmm. The track on release with Anne's surname. But I'm never too picky. Apart from when I have to be very picky, kind of like, you know, oh, that sounds too high, or I don't like that sound, because that's it. It's very difficult to listen to someone's music and accept that it's going to be released as your piece of music.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't really, probably because we twin brothers, so sometimes I think, how bold is Canada doing, actually? What do they handle this? You know what I mean? It's like, I know it's just like, I don't know, you must really be connected. Probably me and Fabrizio are obviously connected, but that doesn't mean that I like everything he does, and probably he dislike what I do sometimes. That's the way.
So the other good thing you've been doing is you've been sort of paying good attention to your back catalogue. There've been the compilation Somewhere in Time, Treasure, and Archive. So do you basically, because Reflex no longer exists, do you basically just have the rights to all the Reflex stuff and can... Ah, that's great.
Well, and that was the final chapter of Reflex. They released the rights to the respective owners and artists, and we can manage to release or reprint anything as we did with, it was Weemy Records, I think it was, which actually released the album. If I don't make a mistake, no, I don't, because there was one digital record of Reflex for artists, two or three of us, which was the album that was never released on, that was never printed from Reflex. It was reprinted, and that was it's still okay. I mean, it was a nice thing to do. I mean, so we own the rights and we can do anything we want to, I mean, without asking anybody, can I do this or can I do that? Like happened with ACV. One of the reasons why we. Actually, I remember the guy from Canada, Jason Arm, where we used to have a few releases, and we had this Dark Angelo 2 EP. Mm. And he said to me, he asked the guy about that tape that used to have the original, certain original track. We have an EP which is just floating in the air, which was the original Audio Autonomia Division album, which was never. And he had a copy. And I actually extract the tracks from a tape. Because basically what happened, that guy was so, I don't know if he's still alive. I hope he is. He never answered anybody. So he does not own any rights on that material, but he doesn't care to reply anybody asking, can I have that? Because we have to release. So, you know, you don't waste your time with people like this, you know. Say goodbye, have a copy on tape, restore it. It'd probably be even better. Why not? You know, we're talking about vintage sounds. Why not?
So one final question I want to ask. You've got such a sort of large history. You've released so much brilliant music. What is the one track you would send people? If they'd never heard of you before, I'm sure most people have, but like they say they haven't, what's the one track you think that really kind of sums up what you did?
Like the one, what I have to say, it's definitely a Diagram one. Because I realized, despite being made so much music, that certain sound is really us in a way. You know, I mean, we love grind dance, we love techno as well. Why not? But I must be honest with myself as well. When I listened to, or when I bumped into this. Diagram, a couple of them. There's one guy which I have to thank him always that made a video on YouTube using the Diagram tracks with it was a very well done. And I realized that, yeah, if I have to go to listen to that, and I know that probably that track will not, well, maybe I'm wrong, will not excite people so much because, you know, because it's different. And I always said to myself, yeah, but we are different. We like to So yeah, going to listen to it because people expect you to be like techno, electro, whatever. No, we really are Diagram, and then we can evolve. But that's why Electric Road is on the plate again.
Yeah. Different and beautifully different, I think.
Oh, thank you very much. We are flattered by it. Thank you. So we are really, really, again, we are so, it was so nice at the Primavera Sound. We are especially talking with young artists that know our music so well. And we were like, oops, okay, which means that you've done something nice. And that was really good. You know, it really keeps us making music. And that was the most important things, you know. People that can say, I like your music, that is the best we can get, compliment we can get. More than money can make, honestly.
Well, look, I'm really looking forward to new music coming out. I really hope as well you can come back and play again in Barcelona sometime soon when things are a bit less frantic, for me anyway. That'll be fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for having us. And yeah, we obviously keep in touch. We will probably Barcelona will know when we're on the soil again to make some noise. That's for sure. And you're going to know it first.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.